Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Lace Speed podcast, coming to you from Shea B. This week I'm having a musing on lace prickings. They're the patterns that we use to make bobbin lace. And it's a riff on a blog that I wrote late last year on to film or not to film, a sort of brief history of pricking making. Once again, there's links in the notes to this podcast that will take you to the original blog, and you'll see some pictures there that I'll be talking about, but I'm going to try and describe them well for you. So if you're not able to follow those links while listening, you get an idea of what I'm talking about. So why do we prick out patterns when we make bobbin lace? When you're working a piece of lace, it's rather like doing a dot to dot. There are small holes pricked into a piece of cardboard, and you use these holes to know where to place your pins. Taking the time to prepare the pattern in advance of starting the lace means that the lines in your lace will be clean and they'll be straight. It's easier to get accurate holes for your pins when you pre-prick. So if your lines aren't as smooth as you'd like, then pre-pricking a pattern is the way to go forward. The thickness of the card also helps by making the pins firm. And when you first start to learn to make lace, I always teach people to angle the pins away from them so you can get some tension and make the lace tauter. If your pin holes are wide, your bobbins are going to move against the pin. The pins are going to wiggle. So having something where the pins are nice and firm, they're in the right place, that's how pricking works. Traditionally, bobbin lace patterns were created by pricking out the pattern onto parchment. It's the act of this pricking that in turn becomes the name of a bobbin lace pattern that's ready to be worked. Parchment's a great medium for pricking. It's hard wearing, and because of its constitution, holes pricked in them tend to stay the same for a long time and long-term use. For lace makers at the 19th century, often a pricking might be given to them by the lace dealer. So having something that they would make again and again and was going to be hard wearing was really important. I have a number of these parchment patterns which date from the end of the 1800s and the start of the 1900s. And if you hop over onto my blog page for the notes from this podcast, you'll see an example of a parchment pricking. It's been really well used, and you can see that the holes are actually still quite visible within there. During the lace revivals in the 1970s, people would take rubbings of older prickings and true them up. The idea of truing is that a continual use, because different sized pins might be used, the holes can get enlarged or possibly move. If you've inherited a pattern, then you may not have access to the same size pins. When I started, fine brass pins were pretty fine. These days, they're actually quite thicker. It's down to the manufacturing techniques and what's available to buy as way of pins. Often pricking would be a copy of a copy. At some point, many of us have taken time to prick through an existing pricking to create a copy, but by doing this, the holes can get damaged or the lines start to wiggle. A rubbing would be taken of the wrong side of the pricking to start the truing process. The side where the pins prick through the parchment would be rough. This aside would give a good surface to take the rubbing from. The pattern then would be a reverse of the original, and time would be taken to reverse it again to create a true pattern. Think of it a bit like taking a brass rubbing, but from something very much smaller. Truing meant that the lines were straightened and the pattern was restored. When I got my first book of lace patterns, Bobbin Lace Making, by the wonderful Pamela Nottingham, who we've learnt recently has passed, this was back in the late 80s, and access to photocopiers was difficult at best and expensive at worst. Home printers were certainly not a thing. Most books of lace making suggested that you trace the pattern from the book and then lay the tracing paper over card and prick through the two pieces to make the pricking. Glazed card was, and still is, sold as pricking card. The idea is that it's heavy enough to hold the pinholes and not deform with usage. The downside to tracing your pattern was that unless you were exceptionally careful, it was easy to move the dots a little and your lines then became rather wonky. Then pricking through that, if you weren't accurate with the pricking, with a needle held in a pin vise or a special pricking tool, which is basically a pin vise in a handle, your lines became even more wonky. I was very lucky that when I learnt to make lace, it was through a club at work. So as part of the privilege of that, I was allowed to use the company photocopier to copy a predetermined number of patterns a month. I took complete advantage of this, especially when it came to patterns that were large, such as A3 size. I would carefully make a copy and use that to make my pricking. First, I would, and still do, rub beeswax over the photocopy. This helps the pin that you're using to prick through or needle to slide through the paper and card underneath. It could be great fun trying to do this with the early photocopies, because often the toner that was attached to the paper would start to lift off. And if you stored it in a plastic folder, then you come to take it out the plastic folder and half the dots have disappeared. Not so much of a problem if you're looking at typing and words on the page, but very important when you're looking at small dots. So having rubbed the beeswax over the photocopy and got my piece of glazed card, I would then carefully pin the card with the wax pattern on top of it onto my pricking board. A pricking board is normally sold as being a thick piece of cork. I, being a lonely phone engineer when I started making lace, couldn't afford anything so posh as an actually pre-made pricking board. My pricking board, made in the glorious days of the 1980s, is an offcut of marine plywood with a cork tile Evo stuck to the top of it. It worked just as well, and it's still functioning all these years later. One of the great advantages of pricking through the pattern onto card is that you can make more than one pricking at a time. I know you're not likely to want to make millions of the same pattern, but I've used this technique for two distinct things. Firstly, if I'm teaching, I can create three or four prickings in one go for a group. Prick once, then add the lines to show the direction of the working for each of the copies. Have a look at the blog link and scroll down to the bottom. You'll see a picture of a Christine Springett snake. This is one of the patterns that I've made more than once to use as a teaching aid, and written on it information to help my students as to when to put twists in, number of bobbins, what type of thread. The other is when you want to make a continuous length of the lace. To do this, you need at least two copies of the pattern. You make the lace on the first piece, then position the second pricking at the end of the first and carry on to that part of the pricking. When you get to the end, you add in the first piece and off you go again. I've always thought of this as being something like when you watch those movies of the Egyptians that were made back in the 1950s, and they were moving a large block to make a pyramid by taking a piece of wood from the back, putting it to the front, rolling the block onto that new piece of wood, and then freeing up a piece at the back, moving it back to the front again. It's the same principle. As tech advanced and access to copying at home became easier through home scanners and printers, a trend started to take the photocopy, glue it to some card and cover it with self-adhesive film, or laminate the two layers together. For me, a one-off pattern I'll not make again, I may well cover with film. Just as for extremely complicated patterns that are hand-drawn, the lines in after the picking, then I'll photocopy and cover with film. When I made a piece for my nephew's wedding, which you can see in my blog on the Sixpence Keeper, the edging required two sets of the pattern. I, having planned to make this for over 18 months, probably made it in the 2 weeks before the wedding. So I thought what I'll do is take a photocopy, stick it to the card and then prick through. It'll be quicker. But actually, in retrospect, it probably would have been quicker to have pricked through the pattern onto two sets of card and then drawn in the lines. It wasn't a very complicated design and it would have worked quite easily. I got incredibly bored pricking out the second one, because when you use the photocopy glued to paper with film over the top, I can't rub it with wax. And this meant I had to keep putting the needle in my pin vise into wax to help it go through the now quite hefty film paper card. There are often a number of patterns that are given as sections rather than a full pattern. This often happens when a pattern is a large oval or circle. You get given a third of the pattern, expected to copy and glue it together. Think of it this way, most craft books are a certain size. To put in a very large pattern, the designer would need to either reduce the pattern and expect you to photocopy up larger, often needing access to an A3 printer, or they can give you a third and you copy it and then glue it together. I've got one book where every single one of the patterns tells me to enlarge it a certain amount. Now, when this book was published in the early 2000s, there was a number of stationery stores around that you could go to and have photocopying done. But with that type of thing going and more online stationery now being offered, that's not so much of an option. So having something where you can now just photocopy part, glue it all together to make a master is obviously an easier way to go. I made a large circle pattern for my mum. It's called Dahlia and it's by Claire Buchart, a Swiss designer. After gluing it together, I tried to prick it out the traditional way, but in the end, as madness was approaching, I chose to glue the full pattern to card, cover it with film, and then prick through the three layers. It wasn't a difficult pattern to make, it only takes a few bobbins, but the complexity of then trying to work out how to put the lines in on something so large just became too difficult. Strange thing is, I've actually made it twice now, which goes against my rule of normally only making things with a film copy the once. Coloured film became the thing to buy in the early 2000s. Matte, non-shiny, was easy on the eyes if you were making under artificial light. There's a number of books that suggest that if you're using shiny sticky film, you should rub it over with a Brillo pad, as we call them over here in the UK. It would be steel wool elsewhere to take off the shine. I have to say, I've just never bothered to do that and I just use the shiny stuff. Initially, we in the UK went mad for pale blue film, but as time's gone on, I've seen it available in pale blue, dark blue, grey, green, you name it. These are colour films supposed to help ease the eyes. However, it's worth thinking about printing onto colour card and then covering the printed card with matte clear film, as that's often a cheaper option. Traditionally in the UK, prickings were onto buff coloured card. Now, this is a throwback to parchment, because it's the same colour. The advantage is that most thread colours show up pretty well on pale brown. I actually started using false cap folders to use for my glazed card because when you open them up, they actually open up to quite a large size and you can get a lot of prickings out of them. And I would move to doing things like using blue or green as it was restful on the eyes when teaching. But I realised that not all colours show up on those, especially dark colours. So before choosing your coloured card, it's worth laying the thread onto it and seeing how well it shows up as a different coloured thread can work better or worse depending on the backing colour. Have a look at the blog. There's a picture of a Spanish pattern there. It's actually orange card, and most Spanish patterns are actually printed on orange card because traditionally black was one of the large number of threads that was used in Spanish lace making. Black on blue or green just disappears. So using a blue or green card or a blue or green film is going to disappear. So as I said earlier, my preferred way of creating a pricking is to take a photocopy, prick through the pattern onto the card, then draw in the lines with a fine line permanent marker. When I started making lace, permanent markers weren't that easy to come by. I started off with a mapping pen, as recommended in my book by Pamela Nottingham. And as many of you have known, trying to use a mapping pen and not end up covered in Indian ink can be a very challenging thing to do. I remember spending out £30, which at the time must have been nearly a tenth of my wages, on buying a rotary pen and feeling very pleased myself of having achieved a rotary to do this, as it was much easier than the mapping pen. It lasted for about 6 months, and then I spent a whole weekend trying to clean it. Wasn't necessarily one of my better options. With the rise of good quality permanent fine line markers, which only cost a few pound, it's much easier to do that. I have patterns I made when I started back in the 1980s. I still use that because they are robust. They're on good quality manila folders. I map them out with a good fine liner, and I've made them more than once. And it's nice to go into my little box of patterns and pull out things and pick out a pattern to make again. I've got one Bedfordshire lace corner for handkerchiefs I've made on numerous occasions to give to people as presents. And I'm still using the pattern that I made first for my mum back in the late 80s. You can print directly these days onto card. If your printer will take heavy pricking card, this can be a godsend. Louise West has developed a laser pricker, which she uses after first laser printing the lines of pattern onto card. Check out my blog to see the laser cutter in action from the link to Louise's YouTube channel. I have to admit, it can be something that you just want to spend hours watching. However, before you start printing every pattern in your collection onto card, check that your printer ink is waterproof by rubbing a damp finger over it. If the ink comes off, then it's likely that it will leach into your work and discolour it. This is why traditionally mapping ink or permanent markers were used to add the lines. In that case, clear film over the card is a good option, as no one likes little black dots on their lovely lace. One of the other things that can actually discolour lace is pins. Brass pins traditionally don't rust. These days, most brass pins are actually brass electroplated onto stainless steel. And whilst people think steel doesn't actually rust, it does. It's down to humidity and moisture in the air and mixtures of chromium to make steel with iron, but it can rust quite easily. So the argument always is long term, don't leave a piece of lace on your pillow for a long period of time in a mildly humid environment. You don't want rust on your lace, it doesn't come out. For me, the act of taking a photocopy of your pattern, rubbing beeswax over it to ease the pricking, and then pricking through into your card and adding in the lines with a fine liner is for me as much a part of making lace as winding bobbins and making the stitches themselves. Looking at the pattern as I prick the holes, along with adding in the working direction lines, allows me to study the pattern and start to understand it. I often annotate the pricking, having studied it. Even if it's in a book where there's notes in the book telling me what to do, I might write some of those in. But for a pattern that's just a pricking, I'll look at it and have a think about how I want to work it. I often write on it the thread that I use, mainly because I sometimes forget which thread I was going to use and then can't find the original photocopy, and another story. I once taught someone to make lace, and when she started, she went off to a lace fair to go and buy some equipment and came back with a whole load of bobbins and some beads. And so I'm showing her how to spangle them. After a few, she got a bit fed up, and I was a bit bored, so I said I'd finish spangling them for her so she could start on the lace making. Then I showed her how to do the pricking, and she got halfway through it and kind of got a bit bored with that. This was over a week or so when I was staying with her. So I finished the pricking off for her. Again, it's part of the whole act for me. It helps me learn the pattern. And then it came to winding the bobbins. She wound a few. I finished work early, so I finished the rest for her. And we came to the final evening. I was going to be there and set her up with the bobbins on the pillow and was going through the stitches with her. And I could see she was starting to lose interest again. And this seemed really strange. And in the end, I said to her, "Look, I can understand perhaps you don't want to prick out the pattern. There's other ways around it. And if you don't like winding bobbins by hand, you go get yourself a bobbin winder. Although for me, I've always preferred doing them by hand because I can adjust the tension on the wind much easier. I said, but you know, coming down to it, you've got all this equipment now. It's cost you a bit of money. And what is it you actually want to do? Because you don't seem to like any of the part of the actual making the lace. And she looked at me and said, well, I thought it was going to be more exciting because I just want to sit when we do historical reenactments and have people come up and admire the lace I'm making. And I looked at her and said, what do you mean? And she said, well, whenever you're there making lace, people will be saying nice things to you about it. I was flabbergasted. And I kind of just made my excuses, went to bed, packed up the next morning and left. I don't make lace so that people can look at what I do and go, wow, that's amazing. I make lace because I need to make lace. It's part of me. My mum is convinced that somewhere in my background, there was a lace maker trying to get out. From the moment I got my hands on bobbins, all I wanted to do was just manipulate them. And it became intuitive to me, really, because I just put the hours in to learn. Often learners will say, well, you know, so-and-so is doing better than I am. But when you talk to that person, you find that from the moment they pick the bobbins up, they never put them down. They were working on it every evening until it sunk in and it became intuitive. There aren't any lace makers in my background. Hubby's family come from Malmesbury, which has a very long lace making background. And his great grandmother was headhunted from these weaving and spinning mills in East Anglia to come over to Malmesbury and work in the silk mills there as a young girl. But I think something in my DNA says I should be making lace. Anyway, in recent years, pin by pin instructions have been offered by some designers on how to make their patterns. Going back only a few years, all you ever got was a series of dots on a piece of paper. And it was from your experience that you interpreted how to join them. The first few books that came out in the modern revival in the 70s from Pamela Nottingham were a revelation because for each of the patterns, there was maybe half a page of guidance. The trouble with pin by pin instructions is that with lace making, if you are actually doing pin by pin rather than make this stitch, do that stitch, you tend to not interpret the pattern and not see how the pattern develops. And if there is a typo in the instructions, it can throw the less experienced lace maker off completely. I remember someone coming up to me at a lace day and asking me, did I know anything about how to interpret a pattern, because everybody at the group was stumped by it. And she'd seen on one of my posts me talking about this particular pattern. And I said to her, yes, I've looked at this, and I actually did, I took a photocopy, a picture of the top of the pattern, and made some suggestions for a student on how to start it. And I would send it to her. I keep everything in the cloud. Can send it from anywhere. I'd fed back to the designer and they corrected it in the next edition. But what concerned me was that this person had taken the pattern with instructions to her lace teacher, and the lace teacher couldn't interpret the pattern to help her because she was used to doing it from pin by pin instructions. Doesn't make her less of a lace maker. It just stops you from growing and being able to be adventurous and attack other things. If you like knitting and you just want to do garter stitch, there is nothing wrong with that. But if you want to expand your repertoire and work from patterns and choose other stitches, then learning how those stitches go together to read a pattern in the end is what's important to move forward. it's nice to challenge yourself to do things and to achieve stuff and look at it and say, yeah, I made that and I know how I did it. So it's one of those things. One of the first patterns I got from Biggins, who are a great source for lace patterns for torsion, had the starting pin circled on the pattern. This was going way back to when I started. And I thought, and still do think, that this was a game changer, because up until then, I had to decide where to start the pattern. And they were helping me. I still love that on a pattern. It's just the dot for where the pin goes with a little circle around it. Yes, it's likely you only make a pattern once, so why is it important to have it in card? Well, as I observed at the start of this podcast, taking the time to prepare your pattern in advance of starting your lace means that your lace lines will be clean and straight. It's easier to get accurate holes in your pins when you pre-prick. But more than that, when you have to go through and prick the holes as you go, it slows you down and it will affect your tension. And your piece won't lie as flat and won't be as smooth. So pre-pricking is really quite important. But also, I just enjoy the ritual of choosing the pattern, making the copy, wrapping it with beeswax, putting it onto the card, pinning the whole thing to my pricking board, getting out my pricking handle, putting my betweens needle in it, pricking through the holes, and then marking in the design and the pattern onto the holes. Then winding my bobbins, attaching the whole thing to my pillow, getting it in just the right place to start the lace, and then moving the bobbins. Have it soon. Bye.